time the wind blows puts me back in Manitoba many moons ago.
Well, August might be winding down, but there's still plenty of things to do in and around the province. And we are going to continue with our summer edition of Abandoned Manitoba. Gordon Goldsborough joins us now by phone. He's out in the field, literally in the field, to talk about this week's segment. Hi, Gordon.
Good morning, Nadia.
Where are you right now?
I'm actually at Delta Marsh, north of Port of La Prairie on the south end of Lake Manitoba.
And what are you doing there?
I'm actually teaching a class. I have a class each year at this time of the year. I teach a course in wetlands.
So I think that's fascinating, but that's not what we're talking about today.
No, it isn't.
Okay, where are you taking us on this weekend's road trip?
We're not far from where I am right now, where I'm at Lake Manitoba. We're going to be going up the west side of Lake Manitoba, just south of the Narrows, for next week's 15th annual Stomper Fest.
What is the 15th annual Stomper Fest all about for people who don't know?
It is a celebration of Indigenous culture. People come, they perform. There's a number of wonderful performers, including Sakine's Finest. But I think the highlight for me, anyway, would be the performance by the Asham Stompers. And they are Métis dancers who perform, among other things, the Red River Jig.
Now, what is it about the Narrows that makes it such a kind of historic part of Manitoba?
Well, I think it's because the name Manitoba derives from that part of the province. The sound that the wind makes and the waves crashing on the rocks, apparently, according to Indigenous tradition, the word Manitowapa, and I'm probably pronouncing it terribly, means the spirit's narrows. And say it comes from this part of the province.
Now, if people are planning a trip up to the annual Stomper Fest around the Narrows, what else can they see there?
Well, I'm assuming that they come up the west side of Lake Manitoba, driving along Highway 50. So one of the places they would pass through on their way would be Langruth. And on the north end of Langruth in the town, there is a monument to something called Big Grass Marsh. I'm a wetland guy, so I would want to maybe talk a little bit about the history of wetlands. On the west side of Lake Manitoba is one of the largest wetlands, the Big Grass Marsh. And in the late 19th century, it was mostly drained and converted into farmland. But in the early 1930s, they started a project to restore it. And in fact, in the very first project carried out by Ducks Unlimited, they built a structure to restore this once vast marsh. Mm-hmm. And so this monument commemorates that very first project, that wetland restoration project of Ducks Unlimited.
What does the monument look like?
It's a sort of a stone with a sort of a plaque on the front of it. It's actually one of several plaques, actually, if you're interested in wetland restoration. There's several plaques around the Big Grass Marsh, both on the west side and the east side, that commemorate its restoration.
Very cool. Okay, so what else is on the list?
Well, we continue north and we go through Amaranth. And there, of course, in this whole area, there's a lot of connections to mining, particularly things like gypsum. In the Amaranth area, there was once a fairly large gypsum mine.
What is gypsum?
Gypsum is a mineral that is used in the manufacturing of plaster and various other products in the construction trade. And here we see a monument for the Western Gypsum Company that during the 20th century collected a lot of gypsum in this area.
Now, I know you can't go anywhere without discovering a schoolhouse. Please tell me that's the case with this.
Oh, absolutely. I say listeners know that I love one-room schoolhouses, and this one has a particularly literary connection. So some listeners may recognize the name F.P. Grove, Frederick Philip Grove, a fairly noted author, and in fact, some have said that he's one of the most gifted authors that have come out of Manitoba. Well, in 1922, he wrote a book called Over Prairie Trails. He loved this part of Manitoba. He spent quite a bit of his life there, and his wife worked in a small school west of Amaranth called Falmouth. And in his book, he talks about going to visit his wife and his daughter when they were at Falmouth. He himself was also a teacher. He was actually somewhere quite a ways away. And at this time in Manitoba's history, there weren't a lot of good roads. And so he describes the sort of horrific conditions he would have to go through to visit his wife and daughter on the weekend. It's a really evocative description of what the a province used to be like back in the 1920s.
Now, the next item that you're going to talk about, I find, is very cool. Tell me about the Thunderbird Nest.
Well, if you go up to the Narrows itself, on the west side of the Narrows, there is what is believed to be the only example of a Thunderbird Nest in western Manitoba. There's some in eastern Manitoba, but this is the only one in western Manitoba. And the idea is that a Thunderbird is a mystical creature in Indigenous culture. This particular site was developed by the Anishinaabe people. And the idea is that a Thunderbird is a creature that transforms from an eagle to a human. It eats serpents, and it protects humanity against the great horned serpent. So in order to encourage Thunderbirds to come to an area, people would build a nest, sort of a rock formation, sort of partially in the ground, as a way of bringing a protection to them from the serpents.
Now, if there was one last thing that you could add on this list of places to see in and around the Narrows, what would it be?
Well, I think if you just cross over the Narrows to the east side of the Narrows and just go a little north, you'll find what is called the Rose Hill Limestone Kilns. So carrying on the mining theme, there was a lot of limestone in this area, and they would convert it, the people in this area, into lime, which is a caustic material used in the manufacturing of cement and plaster. And the idea is that they would take the limestone, they would heat it in a kiln to very high temperatures, and that would turn it into lime. And back in 1896, they built a series of limestone kilns in this area to manufacture. It didn't last very long. And by the early 20th century, they had already phased them out. But you can go and see the last two pair of these kilns used in the manufacturing of lime just on the east side of the Narrows.
Are they still there?
Oh, absolutely. And there's a monument there alongside that sort of gives you a description of what the process was.
What does it look like?
Basically, it's a big pile of stones. It's square in outline, taller than a person stands high, and there's a little door in the bottom. And in fact, if you're inclined, you can kind of crawl through that door into the kiln itself. I've stood inside the kilns.
And how is it?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of neat to know that you're inside something that would have once been very high a temperature. And it just was part of the process to make building materials. You know, long before we just had a place we could go and buy the lime, you made it yourself.
Yeah, very cool. Gordon, thank you so much. Where are you taking us next weekend?
Well, I think the next weekend I'm going to stay a little closer to home for myself. I'm going to take a look at a few of the architectural gems in downtown Winnipeg that you may wish to see if you're visiting Manifest.
Staying close to home on the long weekend. I like it. Gordon, thanks so much for this.
You're welcome, Nadja.
Every time the wind blows, puts me back in Manitoba. Many moons.